It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 332. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please remember to visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can send me any question, suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I got four voicemails for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And speaking of email, I printed over 50 email messages, comments, questions. There's no way I will get to all of them tonight, but we'll try to knock some of them out. But I have such a jam-packed show. There are so many things to talk about. This is probably going to be a long show, but that's okay, and there's a reason why. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Something I never promote is my Facebook site. Some of you have found me and follow me on Facebook. I am going to start promoting that because I'm posting a little more to that. And if you want to know, I guess, a little more about what I'm doing, maybe what I'm working on, if I'm traveling, I will be logging pictures, maybe some videos. So that's facebook.com/MikeTechShow, all one word. So it's very easy to follow me. And the reason I bring this up, because of my trip last week and why there was no show, I was in New Orleans because it was a surprise birthday present from my wife. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. That's why it's going to be a long show. I posted every day something on Facebook as I was visiting different restaurants, different places, even a one-minute segment of a jazz group that was playing on Royal Street. I posted that up right away, and not only that, I purchased their album. It was their CD. It was a $10 donation, and the CD, I love this, from an independent artist. They're, you know, trying to get known. And it was, the cover was photocopied paper and with all of the listings of the tracks. And the CD was a copied CD with nothing stamped on it, nothing written. And that was great. I asked them if I could play some of their music on the show that, you know, I do a podcast. And they were like, oh, absolutely. So at the end of the show, going to get a little jazz and I will share some music with you. Certainly in the post show tonight. I have lots of great music planned. With all that, since I'm going to be doing so much on Facebook, and you know I'm not going to kill everybody by doing, you know, going crazy, but since I'm going to be doing a little more than the tweets that I do, if you're interested, come on over, add me as a friend or send a friend request, and I'll accept it, and you can follow me on Facebook. Also, we have the wiki. I don't want to forget to mention that. That's at mtswiki.com. Here's what happened. Not this past weekend, the weekend before, a friend of mine invited me to a behind-the-scenes tour of Lincoln Financial Field, which they seem to do on a regular basis. And it's a Saturday. And he said, you know, his brother won these tickets to go there. And I was like, okay. So he came over the house, got together, we had some breakfast, and we went down to Lincoln Financial Field, which is where the Philadelphia Eagles play. And that was a nice tour behind the scenes, had a good time. Well, what I didn't know was there was a surprise party being set up back at the house. And this was all planned as to why I was being brought out of the house. And the surprise party, I turned 50 years old yesterday. So it was the 17th. So this was earlier, so certainly it was a surprise because I would have never thought that there would have been a birthday, you know, over a week early being celebrated for me. But there's a reason. There's a method to my wife's madness here. And I got home and was just blown away because there were so many people in the house for the surprise party. Everybody parked far away and walked, so I had no idea that anybody was here. And it was great to spend time with some of my network people that reported to me at my previous company, friends, family. It was great. Had a great time. But what truly blew me away was my wife's present, and that was a trip to New Orleans. And she wanted to give me enough time to plan. So I had a couple days. So this is a Saturday. We're going to be then leaving on the upcoming Wednesday. So I had to quickly do plans. So I quickly, I sent out a tweet and posted on my website. There's not going to be a Mike Tech show for last week. I also had to scramble and reschedule clients for this week. That just happened. There's a meeting that I have to go to, my B&I meeting. I had to get a substitute. So I spent Sunday consulting almost all day. And then Monday and Tuesday quickly just making sure that I can go away. Boy, what a tremendous trip. I'm only going to spend a couple minutes on this, but I have to talk about it. I have not flown for over 2 years. Since I've been consulting on my own, there's been no reason to travel. All my clients are local. Now flying where I have the means of a smartphone, what I was able to discover, there are some great apps that can really help you manage your flight and your travels. Now that I'm going to be traveling, my wife, to save money, what she does, her and my son, my oldest son, they worked out a schedule that they had one airline going down. So we had AirTran flying down and Southwest coming back. And it seemed like that worked out the best way for pricing. So a couple apps that I quickly downloaded. One is Gate Guru. What Gate Guru does, it tells you everything about what gate you're going to be at, what gate that your flight is going to be leaving from, what gate you're going to be landing, so you're going to be for a connecting flight. Now, this was important, but going from Philly to New Orleans, we had a half-hour layover in Atlanta, so I was all ready. I had my Gate Guru app, and it said you're going to be, you're going to be landing at C1, and the gate that you're going to be taking off is C7. I said, oh, great. We're going to be in the same Well, that's great until the airline changes something at the last minute. I'm literally walking off the plane and I'm all cocky thinking I've got this handled because I got my app telling me where to go. So I just confirm with the stewardess saying, so-and-so flight. And she says, no, that's D5. I said, it says C7. No, it's D5. And I'm like, great. Anybody familiar with Atlanta, you have to go down and take a train, but luckily it's very, very fast. And they shuttle you from concourse to concourse. So at least going from C to D wasn't as a hassle as I thought it was going to be. Because if you were in Philadelphia and that happened, let me tell you, that's not easy. Going from like the end of one and then going all the way over, work your way over to another concourse and down. We don't have trains. So luckily, Atlanta's so big that I was able to take a train. And we made the flight with no problem. We had a few minutes to spare. Although I was hoping to get something from Starbucks, but the line was so long that I would have missed the flight if I had waited in line for my latte, so that wasn't happening. I quickly grabbed some water from a vendor, and even that was touch and go because the lines and the amount of people in Atlanta, it's just so big. There's just so many people because that's a major hub. So anyway, we land at New Orleans at about 9 a.m., and it was perfect. I was able to get a cab. We checked in early at the hotel, which was right in the middle of the French Quarter, which is where you want to be as close as you can to Bourbon Street, but not beyond Bourbon Street. That's the key. The first thing we did was we head to, and I put this up on Facebook, the Court of Two Sisters, which is an incredible jazz brunch buffet that is phenomenal. Now, I've been to New Orleans twice pre-Katrina, and I've always wanted to go back. And this is where my wife just was so incredible. I'll never forget, she turned 50 last year, and I threw a big party. And one of the things at the end of the night, she says, boy, what do you want on your 50th? And I said, hey, you know, I'd love to, let's celebrate it in New Orleans. Well, never thinking, actually, I forgot that I even said that, and never realized that that would actually happen. And why I'm taking a few moments to talk about this, turning 20, turning 30, turning 40, that didn't scare me. Turning 50 is scary. And I know everybody's going to react differently. When you turn 50, you start to get reflective. You start to look at your life and you, man, it's almost over, you know? And you start to worry a little more. And one of the things that I have been so fortunate that being able to do this podcast has given me an avenue to have an outlet, sort of an audio diary over the last 6 years. And may I go on and on for longer, but this audio diary, that's why I have to mention important things that are happening in my life within the show, because this is going to be listened to maybe by, you know, great, great grandchildren, hopefully. And they will know, hey, this is what happened to great granddad when he turned 50. You know, wow, great grandma took him to New Orleans to celebrate it. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's there and it's going to be recorded and it's available. And that's why I have to do it. And I'm always torn about that. How personal do I get? I know some of you are going to send me email. You don't like that. But you know what? This show's going to be long enough. I have so much tech to cover here that I think you are going to be happy. I wanted you to know why sometimes I have to talk about what's happening. I have to talk about what's personal to me, because it is a Mike Smith diary, really, an audio online diary of what is happening in my life. And my life, yes, tech is an extreme part of my life, but I also need to share that and talk about that. And some of you want to hear it. I know some of you don't, and I just need to talk about it. So hopefully you don't mind and you just kind of bear with me on the beginning here. I know Todd does that a lot on Geek News Central, and that's a nice part, you know, because you want to hear what's going on. And I want you to know that I really missed not doing a show last week. And Thursday night, I believe I was at Brennan's and took a picture as they were actually preparing the Bananas Foster dessert. And I took a picture, posted it on Facebook as they were preparing it, and then as it was put in front of me, which, let me tell you, from a dessert standpoint, I don't think there's anything that tastes better than that on the face of the earth. I mean, it is the most decadent, best dessert. And what was a pleasure was seeing my wife eat that for the first time and try that, because she has never experienced it. That was my third time at Brennan's. So it was phenomenal. Definitely, we indulged in lots of the great eating, but we also indulged in the music, the jazz, the blues clubs that populate Bourbon Street at night. The weather was just, you couldn't have asked for any better weather. And you know what? I look at this and how lucky I am to have a wife and have a family that knows that I like New Orleans. I hadn't been there in a while. And then to take the time to plan this out and just totally overwhelm me and blow me away. I am so fortunate and so blessed to have such an incredible wife and family. So Dorothy, she doesn't listen to the podcast, and she knows how grateful I was and how thankful. I had a wonderful time, and I couldn't ask for any better time. some of the other apps that I was using for this trip, which I found Southwest Airlines has their own iPhone app. So I downloaded that, and that gets you good information, but only related to the iPhone. That was not the best app, though. The best app that I found was an app that, and there's two of them. There's one called Flight Light, and then there's another one called Flight Update. Now, I'm going to list all of these, and I'm going to list them all in the show notes, because Flight Update costs $4.99. But one of the things that it was able to do was tie into SeatGuru. Now, if you're flying Southwest, anybody who's flown Southwest, you know that you pick your own seat. There's no pre-assigned seat. Now, they have pre-assigned boarding where you, on your boarding pass, it tells you a letter and then a number, which you then stand in line. So they kind of rank you as you've checked in or how much of a flyer you've been with Southwest. Having that to come home, SeatGuru will tell you the layout. It'll give you the exact layout of the airplane that you're going to be boarding. And it tells you with colors which seats are bad, which are good, and then which are great. So you have yellow, red, and green. Anything that's red, avoid. That means it's a horrible seat for some reason, whether it's too cold, too narrow, it won't go back. There's a whole lot of reasons. So if there's red, just avoid it. If it's yellow, that means it's got some problems. Green is the perfect seat. And then just standard seat with nothing good, nothing bad about it, it'll just stay white. I'm looking at the layout of the plane, and I'm ready to board, and the first thing I see is I don't want to be in aisles 1, 2, and 3, and you don't want to be, there's another section of rows, and then you don't want to be in the back. So mentally, I say, okay, I want rows 4, 5, or 6 on this particular plane, or I want it 13 through 20, nothing else. So at least in my head, as you board the plane, you know what row you want to pick. Now, I was fortunate, so you want to be at the close of the plane as you can so it's easy to get off. So I was lucky row 4 was free. So I quickly tell my wife, let's go. We're in row 4 here. Because according to SeatGuru, it said that was a good row. And you know, it was dead on. Just a great tip that if you're flying Southwest, I think it's critical that you have two apps. One, you have to have the Southwest app. It's free. And then I also recommend Flight Update, because now you know where you want to sit. Now, having the Gate Guru app, and that's free, that was great because if you're at an airport that you're unfamiliar with, it can tell you where the bathrooms are and within the concourse. It can tell you what food, what news places you have throughout the concourse. So these are very helpful apps. And it was nice to be able to fly for the first time, to be able to take advantage of apps on my iPhone. So I wanted to share that. So there's, you know, a tremendous tech tie-in there. I did have very good Wi-Fi access while I was away. And one of the things that when you are self-employed like I am, my own business for doing, you know, computer repairs, computer consulting, I had clients that contacted me that had problems. So I was able to, I still did some work, which I know a lot of you sent me emails or definitely posted comments saying, you know, hope you don't do any work. I didn't do a lot of work. I did some work because when clients, you know, if they're calling me on my cell phone, I'm going to answer that. And there weren't many, but there were some problems where waiting for me, when I touched down on Saturday afternoon, I had 2 notebooks and a desktop that had to be totally redone for clients, that I had them drop them off with my kids. My kids put them aside. I told them where to put them. And I was able, that's what I was doing all day last Sunday, which was just working on these computers so then they could be delivered on Monday. And Monday and Tuesday, I had completely just dedicated to clients to make up for because I had to reschedule them, which leads me to next week is Thanksgiving. Now, normally on Thanksgiving over the years, I've done the show on Wednesday night or Tuesday night before Thanksgiving. I've never broadcast it on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night. Well, unfortunately, for all of you, there will be no show next week because we are going away again. Now, this was already planned for a long time, go away for Thanksgiving. So I'm leaving Wednesday morning. I'm not flying anywhere, driving. So I'm leaving Wednesday morning and we're not returning till Sunday. And because of that, I figured, well, boy, I could do a show Tuesday night. No, I'll have no time to edit it. And I've got so many clients I'm visiting, I'm not sure what time I'm going to get home Tuesday. Monday night, I'm going to the Shinedown concert in Delaware with my oldest son, and it's going to be an all-acoustic set from Shinedown. So Monday night, I'm tied up. It is impossible for me to be able to put out a show, so we're going to skip a show for next week again, and then I'll be back in the beginning of December, and we'll keep going. And as we get closer to the holidays, I'll map out what's going to happen for the holiday shows. I don't even know what day Christmas and New Year's falls this week, but I'll look at a calendar and start that planning. But definitely, with Thanksgiving next week, don't forget to check your Black Friday ads. As you know, I always participate in Black Friday. I look for items that I can save a lot of money, where it's something I may want or a client of mine may want. I've certainly gotten notebooks for the kids at a very reduced rate. You know, a notebook computer for, you know, $299 with 4 gigs of memory running Windows 7, that's an incredible buy. But I look for places that are sort of fly under the radar. I never, never go to Walmart or Best Buy. You're going to get killed. The lines are so long. They literally, it's dangerous. Take your life in your hands, especially in the Philadelphia area. I like to seek out Staples. It's one of those stores that has great buys that doesn't seem to lend to the lines that everybody has. And yes, Lou Trek Show in the chat says Saturday. Saturday is some great deals. And it's less crowds. So take a look at, you know, what's available. What are you looking for? And I don't know if that's going to happen for me this year. First off, there's not much that I need. And secondly, I'm going to see what's available at Staples and where I'm traveling. Is there a Staples nearby? Now, over the past few years, I have been very, very fortunate. That is something that we'll take a look at. I haven't really examined that. I may do that over the weekend. And then, of course, this weekend is jam-packed. My youngest son, Tyler, his birthday is Sunday, and we're celebrating it on Saturday. So we just get killed with birthdays in November. Just so many birthdays. And in between all this, my wife's birthday is November 9th. A couple days after we celebrated mine, I have, you know, celebrating my wife's birthday. So all of that happening, it takes a lot of time. And then with consulting. And speaking of consulting, here's what I ran into on Tuesday. I have a client that just got a new system, Windows 7. And he has a peer-to-peer network with three systems running Windows XP Pro. And they're all networked and working perfectly. He has an HP 2100 LaserJet shared on one printer, on one XP workstation. And on another one, he has the HP PhotoSmart B8550. He also has, and I've networked this, an HP OfficeJet, where at first he only had that connected via a USB port. And a few months ago, I said, you know, there's a network port here you should take advantage of. So I put it on the network and then had his systems talk to that. Now, with Windows 7, talking to the HP OfficeJet, no problem. It worked like a champ. I went online, downloaded the full installation of all the software and drivers. It was like a 370 meg download. Installed that. It worked great. Here's my problem. How come I can browse the network on the XP printer, especially the PhotoSmart, which really surprised me. I can see the PhotoSmart printer. I right-click, and it installs the driver and on the Windows 7 system, but I can't print to it. And this printer is working. Other XP workstations in the house can print to it. The system that's connected to it can print to it. It's connected via USB to the local system. How come when I try to print from Windows 7 across the network, the error message is just the test print job has failed. That is it. Unable to communicate to the printer, because I tried a universal print driver where if you download HP's universal print driver, there's a way where you can pick the shared printer or network printer and have it check. And it just came back and said, unable to communicate to the printer. Now, on the HP 2100, when I right-click and say connect, it spends a long time looking for a driver, and it can't find it. And when I went on HP's website, it was unclear. There was no real driver, and it said to use the universal print driver. So here's my question. One, is anyone out there printing from a Windows 7 system to an HP LaserJet 2100? And if so, how did you do it? Because that one, I believe, is completely a driver issue. Now, the next question, what things, I don't know what I'm missing, because I've done this 100 times and successful all the time. This is the first time where I've shared a printer on a system or, you know, worked with the shared printer on an XP system and have been unable to print to it. I mean, I've always been able to make it work. If it doesn't work, it means that there was something wrong with the network or something wrong with the print spooler or there's something wrong with the printer. But I've never been denied the ability to communicate with the printer. So looking for ideas on the PhotoSmart B8550 and then also this HP 2100, email me, send me an MP3 file if you can discuss it, and I will apply that to, you know, everything that you recommend. I haven't had a chance to research it online because I've been so busy. That was Tuesday, and now this being Thursday, I just haven't had a chance, and I promised my client, I said, I will put this out there to my listeners, and I know I will get some great feedback from you because you always come through for me. Another interesting issue, on one of the systems I had to redo, and it was Vista Home Premium, and it was a notebook that I was upgrading to Vista Ultimate. And you're like, Mike, why are you upgrading it to Vista Ultimate? Well, the parent company for this financial advisor, when they apply the whole disk encryption with their software, they do not support Windows 7 yet. That's right. They're going to, but they don't support Windows 7. And this system needs this whole disk encryption. And there's no choice. It can only be what's pushed down from the parent company. There's no choice in this. And they only support on a system that you do not buy from them, they only support Vista Business. Their scripts will not work on Vista Home Premium. So I had to take him to Vista Ultimate because that was the only way I was able to get an upgrade. What a nightmare. I blew it away, and I had the whole full install, and it still gave me fits. When I was done, every time I would open up Internet Explorer, crash. I almost thought there was a hardware problem with memory. Did a memory test? No problem. Did a hard disk test? No problem with the hard drive. It was killing me. Everything I was doing in Vista was killing me. Anytime I loaded the latest ATI driver for Vista, for this mobile ATI card in this HP. It was actually an HP tablet computer. It would crash. It would blue screen. It would. I had so many problems that I said, hold on, maybe if I can convince my client to wait until they can support Windows 7, let's at least bring it to Windows 7 Professional. So I took the brand new Windows 7 Professional, installed it. It worked like a champ. I mean, there was no issues. Every driver found perfectly, running beautiful. Matter of fact, running better than the original operating system that was factory installed, which was Vista Home Premium. So now he's just in a waiting pattern, and it was better to move forward than go back, because the option was, do I put it back to the way it came in with Windows 7, with Windows Vista Home Premium, which he's in no better position because he'll never be able to get that encrypted, the whole hard drive encrypted. At least I put my client in a better position, because they are going to be supporting Windows 7 Professional in like another week or so. So at least we were able to move forward, and now he'll be able to do it. The other system, they killed it. It was XP Pro, and they just killed it. So I had to redo that. That was easy, redoing XP Pro on that system. Then I had another HP desktop, which had to be done, and that was an XP Pro that I was able to redo. So that was my Sunday. That's how I spent it. Sat here just working on systems all day. That's enough for what I'm going to share on the consulting stories. I have a lot of voicemail here, so let's start getting to the voicemail before we get to the email. Here we go. Here's the first one.
Hey, Mike. My name is William. I'm from Hempstead Computers. I was calling about your most recent show. You have the fellow who's got a daughter with a laptop. The wireless not working. Just a quick heads up. If that happens to be a DV series HP, it could be that the solder is becoming brittle and starting to crack out. The next thing that's going to happen is you're going to have screen issues. The general fix for that is a reflow or a motherboard replacement. If you have questions or anything, give me a call. Thanks.
That was a great idea. I was lucky, and I don't think I followed up with everybody, on that particular HP laptop, I was able to redo the wireless driver, and that worked. And once I seen that work and I connected to my wireless network, I was set. But you're right, William. I was worried about that if the wireless adapter had totally went, I would have to get the motherboard replacement. Now, a much cheaper option, which I was willing to try, and I bought a couple extra, are the USB wireless adapters from Monoprice. They're $10. They're so inexpensive, and I keep a couple around now all the time. Well, rather than go through a motherboard replacement, it's so much easier to just plug that in and try it. So that was going to be my next step if the wireless adapter had went bad. But this is a good to get that out there for all of you who are diagnosing and running into a problem with the wireless adapter trying to connect to the wireless network. It's either the driver, or it's either the wireless access point, or it's the actual wireless card that's usually built into the motherboard. So having that extra USB sometimes can get you further by being able to connect, and then it solves your problem. Now with wireless, there's always another problem. You can use Windows configuration to help you connect to wireless networks, or the software that comes with the adapter. I always go with the software that comes with the adapter. They usually give me better features and much nicer software to work with, whether it be Dell or HP or whatever the manufacturer is of the notebook. You're going to find that their software, their full driver set with their utility, sometimes works better than Windows. And what I'll do is, depending on which one, I'll try the other. So if I'm having troubles, or the client's having troubles because they're using the Windows, I'll turn on the utility for the actual wireless card, and then vice versa. If they're using the HP utility, I'll turn that off and try the Windows utility. So that's from software, things that you can try. Always do this. Remove the adapter. Have the latest driver ready to install. Reboot. Let it detect. install the latest driver, and I was good to go once I did that. Here's the next voicemail.
Yep, Mike, this is Brad Warch in California. I just have a comment about your Windows 7 migration. Did you consider using the files and settings transfer wizard? You could load it. If there were XP machines, I know it's limited to where you can save, but if you load the Vista or Windows 7 version on the XP machine, you can save it to network share, to thumb drive, anywhere you want to. Should transfer all the settings and files that are Windows related. I know it won't help with Adobe and those other ones, but it should have helped with printers, i.e. Outlook, as long as it was loaded first, and all the other Windows COTS program. Let me know if you had tried that and had some issues with that or didn't. Thanks. Bye.
Very good idea. The migration that I talked about a couple weeks ago, I have a client that migrated from Windows XP to Windows 7, and I talked about the ups and downs and the good, the bad, the ugly, what worked, what didn't work, things I should have done. I did not try that migration utility. And one of the things that I know, I've mentioned it because other listeners have recommended that utility, and I really should have tried it. I didn't go through the process of testing that migration utility. Reflecting back, I think I found enough of the utilities that's needed to get everything that I want to go from XP to Windows 7 from a settings standpoint based on the applications that are being used. But you're right. I need to set up in a test environment going from XP to Windows 7 here in my office using that file migration wizard that comes with Windows 7 that you can install on XP. I have not went through that. That is something that I really need to go through and experience that myself before I embark upon another migration, because I want to see what does convert, what doesn't, what works, what doesn't work, and then fill in the gaps, identify the gaps, and fill them with third-party utilities that can make up for what does not convert. Or maybe there's certain things that I want to do with Internet Explorer. I'll tell you that utility I recommended a couple weeks ago on all the IE settings, that works phenomenal. I have to take a look at what it's really migrating. I did not want to migrate the office settings because with some of the people, I was actually doing an office upgrade and I wanted that to happen naturally, and I didn't want to infect the office upgrade by migrating all those settings, because I don't know if I totally trust going from one version to another version. So we'll have to see. I didn't try that. It's on my list of things that I need to test with.
Hi, Mike. It's Andy Halsey from AmsterdamLovingItaly.net. A couple of questions, comments about your most recent podcast that I'm listening to anyway. Regarding your 60 days locking on domain transfer, I think that must depend on who you're transferring from, because I just went through exactly the same issue about a week ago with one client. Their admin contacts were wrong. I changed it to my account, and I was able to transfer the following day. Like you, I've had excellent support from GoDaddy on the phone, but their website help is just, and their website UI is just awful trying to work out where everything is. But the actual domain transfer should go across pretty easily. And then as far as your Wi-Fi, I had the same issue on my computer. I actually found that the Microsoft virtual Wi-Fi adapter had been enabled. And what was happening is that I could connect through Wi-Fi, but when I looked at the properties in my IP config, I had no IP address. It was not getting anything from DHCP. I think that was the case. Either I was getting anything, but I couldn't ping out. I can't remember exactly what. But anyway, removing disabling the Microsoft Wi-Fi adapter fixed the issue. And if you're interested, if you go over to appsbloggingwizardly.net, I have a blog post about what I actually did and more details. So thanks for the show as always, and look forward to hearing the next one. Cheers.
Hey, thank you. And Winston Wolf also told me that you could transfer domains less than 60 days. Knowing that, I now have to give it a try with GoDaddy. I don't have to wait till the end of December, which I updated all of my contact information. And when you make those changes, some registrars, it doesn't look like they all obey this, which they kind of put a freeze, which GoDaddy told me, of 60 days. But not everybody does that, and that you can do it sometimes, where you change your domain name from one registrar to another, and you can do that even after you've updated your contact information in a period less than 60 days. I have to try that and just see if it works. So thank you very much for that. And here's the last voicemail, but we got a lot of email that we're going to try to get this on.
Hi, Mike. Quick question about show 330. Near the end of the show, you responded to a listener question about backing up systems at the file level, and you mentioned three products: Shadow Protect, Syncback, and Robocopy. Now, I've just recently used the 30-day trial version of Acronis True Image Home 2011 to take a backup of a 140-gig hard disk before I wiped a Windows Vista machine to install Windows 7. And I've been trying to use the standard Windows copy to move everything over onto a network storage device, but first time around, it failed partway through and I had to start over again. And anyhow, I eventually gave up on that and was looking around for something else, a better way of doing it. So I downloaded the trial version of Acronis and everything worked just great using that. It ran overnight and did the whole backup. And I then did a couple of incremental backups after that, which went really quickly. And after I did the upgrade, I installed Acronis again and brought everything back over onto the laptop on Windows 7 from the network device. So I was really happy with Acronis and was all set to buy the whole thing once the 30-day trial period expired, but then listened to the show. So just wondering now whether there was some particular reason why you didn't mention Acronis, or whether there's something that Syncback does that Acronis doesn't, or whether Syncback is just better in some way. So that's the question. All the best, Mike. Bye for now.
Great question. There's nothing wrong with Acronis, but this issue was Daniel McCoy, who a longtime listener, who was running into this backup dilemma because he was experiencing problems with Windows Home Server. And he had tried and was kind of afraid of the latest version of Acronis because it was buggy. And he had ran into some issues, read about other issues. So the latest version of Acronis might have some problems. So you're better off going back a version possibly, and you'll save a lot of money. Nothing wrong with Acronis. I own Acronis. I have it. I love it. It works. But you mentioned you can't compare Acronis to Syncback. Acronis can do a full system image. Syncback cannot. Syncback does a great job of synchronizing files. If I got a lot of files that I have to copy and I don't want an image, I let Syncback do it because with its special sauce, what it has when it's trying to make a copy, it will get has a better chance of getting the copy and then not failing on the rest of them. Where if it does fail on one particular file, it will list it so you can go back later and only deal with the one file, and you didn't give up the entire copy that you were trying to get. There might be 5,000 files. Two might fail. And if you're using just the regular copy and paste, oh, forget about it. It is just not going to work properly. There's so many things that can stand in the way of an access denied on a file, or maybe one file's open. You're better off getting a program that can deal with those errors and then move on, and then log it for you to let you know what didn't copy and what did copy. So if you want a full image of your system, you got Acronis and you got Shadow Protect. If you want to do file copy, you can program your own little script using Robocopy. You can use Syncback, which I always recommend. I think that's great. And then you got a Microsoft utility called SyncToy. That's another one. If you're going to sync, you might as well go right to Syncback. I think that's better, and it's got much easier features for, and it's more feature-rich for lots of advanced things that you can decide on what you want to happen on a synchronization, where what do you want the program to do if a file doesn't exist in one location or the other location. You can have it make those decisions and then properly copy the file. And I have had great success using SyncBack, but there's nothing wrong with Acronis. You do want to be careful. And I bet you, since we've last talked about it, or at least when Daniel last looked at Acronis, I bet you there's some patches or some updates for any of the bugs, because Acronis is a very good software. Although, one complaint on one of the older versions, that depending on the combination, I guess, of the hardware, if you did a bake-off of Acronis versus Shadow Protect, you're going to find that the restore process and the whole time in making your image and then doing a restore, you're going to find it significantly faster with Shadow Protect. And that has been a feedback from not just me, but a lot of other listeners over the course of the last couple years. So you're going to find that Shadow Protect is going to cost a lot more, but you're going to have better speeds and throughput for it, for doing the image. But there's nothing wrong with Acronis. Let's get to some email. This is for John. And this goes back to when we learned that Xmarks was going away. And it looks like that someone came in and saved the day for Xmarks, and that product is not going to go away right now. And that's good news. But for bookmarks, he says, my vote for the best bookmark tool is the Google Toolbar with Firefox. I have been using it for bookmarks for about a year. Using it on two desktops and a laptop, just install the Google Toolbar and Firefox and log in. All my bookmarks are there. Thank you. This is from David, also on bookmarks. I've been using Google Bookmarks, so another vote for Google Bookmarks. This is Alan. It has been a while since show 152. Now, he's going all the way back and commenting on 152, where Ryan and I, and I know a couple other people, talk about hosting. And I think this was a Mike Tech Show roundtable. I wanted to follow up with you on my experience using the forums mentioned and hosting companies I tried. I found almost all hosting companies have something wrong with operations or support. You pay money each month to those companies, and when you need help or to use a common hosting function, they fall flat. I don't know if that's true with all of them. Hosting that I have had problems and no longer use, but have clients who are stuck until a major change is needed, is Mocha Host, Network Solutions, Brinkster, which you also had problems, Lunar Pages, WebEddy. I took some time recently and went through the forums you mentioned. This is where I listed a lot of hosting forums at that time. This was a while ago, that would post reviews, and you got to be careful. And we talked about that, where you want to make sure where's the review coming from, and make sure it's a qualified review and it's not the company themselves. And you know, you got to, that's another thing with reviews. You have to be very, very careful when you're looking at forums. Well, anyway, he goes on. There are so many hosting companies who give poor service. I finally found the site hawkhost.com. I used them for a couple of sites. Great service. I could actually call and get a person to chat with. Well, I get that with GoDaddy all the time. And a great product. They introduced an unlimited plan recently under the site froghost.com. Now, there's no such thing as unlimited. Remember that. It does not exist. And I don't care how many of you write me and tell me, there's no such thing as unlimited, because if you put it to the test and really start pushing the bandwidth, they will shut you down. And I don't care what they said in their agreement or their contract. I know this for a fact on a lot of hosting companies, where they say unlimited until you start to really use the service. And guess what? You're being turned off. And you're going to say, well, wait, I have a contract. I have a deal. No, they have fine print to get around it. They will shut you down. So keep that in mind. There's no such thing as unlimited bandwidth in hosting. It does not exist. So think about it. It can't exist. So great experience all around. So, Alan, I take issue with the unlimited, only because you haven't been there and I have in pushing services. Be careful of that. Thanks for all the great information and the help that you provide. I am heading to an interview today armed with your interviewing advice. Ooh, that is good. You know what, Alan? How did you make out with the interview? Got to let me know because I know this was back in October. Hopefully you made out okay. This is from Steve. I need to convert an OST file to a PST. Now, the PST is the standard storage file for Outlook. OST is an offline storage file if you're working offline from an Exchange server. Now, is there a free or open source piece of software that will do this? I went looking for him, and there are a lot of advertised software, and I've noticed something, and beware of this. For something that sounds so common, like going from an OST to a PST, there's a lot of fake sites that have an answer to this, and it's a utility, and when you go to install it, it's a virus. I know. I've done it. And I noticed there's a very popular one that will go from, it says OST to PST. What you want to do is you need verification of a file of a utility. I've noticed, like when I went searching for a print utility, I noticed that there was a lot of sites that would that automatically are built around that utility. And there's nothing else with the site. If you go to download and you see that it's an executable, you really got to be careful. Scan, you know, right click and scan it with your antivirus software. If it's a Vira or whatever you're using, that's important because a lot of these utilities I noticed are fake. And it's a way to lure you in because it's something that common that people are searching for. Just be aware of that. He says, he installed a new server for a friend, and I'm kind of in a bind to get this fixed. I've sent him an email on how to do this. Love the show. Never miss it. I also support your advertisers when I can. Now, thank you, Steve. What I recommended is doing it manually. Loading up his workstation, not connected to the Exchange server. Then what you do is you take all those files, all the email, and you drag and drop them into a new PST, which you created. It'll take a little time, but it will work. And then you can go from the OST to the PST. I recommend doing it manually only because I need verification here. This is one of those type of utilities that if you know specifically that this particular utility that you paid for or downloaded absolutely works, you can't just Google this and email me. I need you to tell me that you've used the program and it has worked and it has done what you've said it would do. Then email me and give me the circumstance, and then I will definitely pass that on. Remember, when I'm asking a question for something like this from utility, I appreciate the response where you would go and you would Google it and say, oh, here you go, and then send me the link. Don't do that, because I'm finding that a lot of those links, when you do the first hit on Google or whatever and you try it, utilities, a scam. It's a virus. And I've noticed this happening more and more lately. So be aware of that. Be cautious. That's why you kind of need a test bed for some of these utilities. And you got to try in a virtual environment, run a utility. That's why I have Windows XP. I have a virtual setup here that if I blow it up, I don't care. I don't care. Who cares? It's virtual. You know, I just have another file backed up and just boom, put it right back in its place. So have a method for testing some of these utilities. And you certainly never want to do this on site at a client. And God forbid running one of these utilities and you blow up a client system. You never want to be in that situation. So be careful of just Googling for a solution and then finding a utility that might be the magic solution, because it may not be. This is from Scott. Just listen to your podcast on the train. I'm using LastPass with a YubiKey. My wife has a second YubiKey and share all the accounts. Also works with iPhone as a second factor authentication. Love your work. Thanks, Mike. And this is Scott from Melbourne. Wow, thank you very much. Andy. Mike, thanks for your show. I get the podcast on my iPhone through iTunes. Very informative and entertaining. I am interested in more information about the problem you discussed on the episode where some HP LaserJet 1320 printers would not make multiple copies after upgrading to Windows 7. My business is in the laser printer sales, service, and supplies. We repair a lot of HP printers. And as in this case, we often find the printer problem is not with the printer at all. Maybe we could share your fix on my company blog. And the blog is selaser.blogspot.com. I am inviting you to write a guest post for the blog on the subject. You know what? I am interested, Andy, and I am going to mark this to contact you. You had to disable the Mopier feature within the device settings of the driver, and that's what fixed this. This is a follow-up to show 330, and this is from Dave. And first off, regarding the gateway computer that you couldn't run DBAN on, why not just remove the hard drive and run DBAN from another computer? You know I was going to do that, but I'll tell you, those old gateway cases, I actually remember I owned one of them, and it was a pain. And digging in there to get the hard drive out, oh, I thought of that, to just take it apart and pull out that hard drive and run DBAN on it, I was thinking of that, and it just wasn't worth the effort. It's easier for me on my next visit to just have a floppy disk with me and I take care of it. But I agree, and I was actually thinking about it. I know you've spoken in the past about IDE to USB connectors, and I keep one with me all the time. My personal favorite being a Rosewill USB 2 adapter for IDE SATA, and the link is below. Secondly, regarding the laptop that couldn't connect to a specific wireless network, I know it's going to sound odd, and you might already have done this, but run an antivirus scan on it. I had the exact same problem a few months back with a customer of mine where the laptop all of a sudden stopped working on their wireless network, but it worked fine elsewhere. I went through the same routine of updating, changing drivers to no avail. I ran a bootable antivirus utility using Sardu and detected, cleaned a number of infections. Once clean, the laptop worked perfectly at the customer site. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that, Dave. And you're right. I didn't even get to that point because just redoing the driver solved my problem. And that was it. I just shut it down. Boom. Problem solved. Moved on. But you're right. You wouldn't think of that to try. I think, you know, that's good. It's like if you're a chess player, you know, when in doubt, take a pawn. When in doubt, run antivirus cleaner. It can't hurt. Run Malwarebytes. Run super anti-spyware. You always want to make sure that everything's clean. And sometimes, yes, that can be the culprit of a problem. This is from Curtis. I would like to ask you and your listeners for their suggestions on a file server. In our company, we have a graphics department that works with very large files, some well over a gig. This being said, we are in the need of a new file server solution. We are a Windows-based company, but for this situation, a Linux OS would not be out of the question, as I am more familiar with Enterprise Linux than Windows. I need something that is going to integrate with the current operation, Windows and Mac, as well as be scalable. I don't want to have to go to the boss next year and say, we need a new solution. For backups, we have a Drobo that I will use to house the backup properly. It is a 4-bay Drobo, and I can always just put a few 2-terabyte drives in it to make sure it can store the compressed files. I am planning on just doing incremental backups instead of a full-blown backup every week. Thanks in advance, and I look forward to hearing from you. I would like everybody to weigh in on this. When you say server, a full-blown server, and I've talked about this once, is hardware that has redundant power. It has the redundancy and the fault tolerance built into the hardware that makes it a server class device from a hardware system failure where some of the components are hot pluggable. You can have different sets of RAID. You can have multiple NICs. You have different levels of servers, but even the lowest end server from Dell or HP or IBM for that matter, it's going to cost you a few thousand dollars. If you just want storage, maybe just a rock solid workstation with plenty of storage. So I ask you the following. What is your budget for this project? Do you have $5,000 to throw at the hardware? You want to be Linux. And certainly, you know, Dell and HP support Linux operating systems on their server. So if you want to go for a real robust server, then I'm a big fan of HP servers. Get, if you want to make sure that you have the proper support, get the 4 or 5 year upgraded support on site. So this way, if there is a component problem, someone's going to be out in a couple hours. You just call HP or you call Dell, they're going to be out there. If I had to do a bake-off between HP servers and Dell, from my knowledge and experience from a couple years ago, I'll tell you, I have not been working on Dell servers lately. I've only been working on HP. But I've spent my time, you know, a good portion of my time working with Dell servers. And I just think the HP servers are better. And, you know, I'm going to get a lot of feedback saying otherwise. I know shops that are 100% Dell and they love them. And I've worked with Dell servers and my experience has been I've had better with HP for my server. I know Winston, who you know, who I work with, he swears by IBM. And he did something in the middle of the project one night when we were there all night to prove a fact. He called IBM tech support and we had a human being in under 2 minutes. And he says, I'm sorry to bother you. I don't have a problem. I was just calling to prove a point to a friend on just how good your tech support is. And we had an engineer in under 2 minutes from IBM. I don't work with IBM and I've had no experience with it, but that's a great story. And I trust Winston and he swears by IBM's and all of his servers for all of his clients are all IBM, where mine tend to be all HP. Okay. And that's just from, you know, how you've been, you know, what you've been exposed to, or what opportunities you've had to roll out and what experience. So I feel more comfortable around an HP server than I do some of the others, just because I've come from a big, big HP server farms from some very, very large billion-dollar companies that I've had to manage the network environment for. That's where I can only relate to my experience. I think I'm running out of steam here for this show, and I know we're over an hour, and we're going to go a little further here. Please take a moment. The holidays are coming up. You're going to be purchasing gifts. Amazon has incredible, you know, that their support is just unmatched. They get the product out there fast. I ordered something this past Saturday. It arrived on Monday. On Monday. If you're purchasing from Amazon, and I know most of you will, when you stop and think for a second, say, you know what? I got to go to MikeTechShow.com and use Mike's Amazon link at the top left-hand corner. Then go and make your purchase, and you're supporting the show, and I really appreciate it. And now, throughout the holidays, everybody's going to be purchasing stuff. Use my Amazon link. That's my only plea for support for the show tonight. Thank you. Now, on with the music. The group that I met on Royal Street in the middle of the French Quarter is this little jazz group called the Smoking Time Jazz Club. And I have a song that I'm going to play called Sugar. And it's from their latest CD, Living in a Great Big Way. I hope you enjoy this. I will have a link to their Facebook page Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up. Is the Smoking Time Jazz Club from their latest CD, Living in a Great Big Way. And it was nice getting to hear them live right on Royal Street. Royal Street, they will shut down in the afternoon for artists and performers in the French Quarter. And then at night, they shut down Bourbon Street. For traffic, so this, because it's filled with just so many people, and it's what a great experience. And then not only that, but then You make your way over to Jackson Square, where there's lots of artists and more performers, and it's the experience of New Orleans and the French Quarter. And I'm so glad to see the French Quarter back on their feet and doing so well since Katrina. And I had just a tremendous time there, and I can't wait to get back again. I hope you enjoyed just a little piece of the music. Thank you so very, very much for supporting the show, listening to the show, downloading. I hope you liked my sharing some of the things that I experienced in New Orleans. And don't forget, you can follow that and actually see those things on my Facebook. And that is facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Next week, no Mike Tech Show because of the Thanksgiving holiday. I want everybody to take a moment and give thanks to everything that you have. Do that and have a very safe and happy holiday. I'll see you the following week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.